This happens when my life flashes before my eyes. She paused and stared straight ahead a moment. And I may or may not have peed my pants.
Come on, sweetheart. Cookie helped her stand, and I rushed to Mimi's other side. For the low cost of a 20 spot, this time from Cookie's wallet, we borrowed one of the offices in which to talk to her. You got a set of lungs, girl, I said as I raided a small fridge for a water. I handed it to her when her nose stopped bleeding.
I am so sorry about that, she said, waving a hand in front of her face. I was disoriented. I just didn't know who you were.
Well, it didn't help that Casper the flashlight ghost was all up in your face. Cookie scowled. Mimi, this is Charlie, she said.
Oh my gosh!
She tried to stand, but her legs didn't hold, and she toppled back into the chair. I reached a hand over and took hers. Please don't get up. I'm not that special.
From what I hear, she said, holding my hand in hers, you're every bit that special. How did you find me?
Cookie grinned. That's what Charlie does. Are you okay? After a few minutes of introductions and the lively tale of how Mimi ended up in a homeless shelter that involved a drunken taxi driver and a small but containable fire, we moved on to the more important part of the story, why she was in a homeless shelter.
I just thought no one would look for me here. I thought they wouldn't find me.
Mimi, Cookie admonished. Warren and your parents are worried sick. She nodded.
I can live with that. Better worried sick than dead.
She had a point. It was late, and my head was on the verge of exploding. I decided to fill her in on our suspicions and go from there. Stop me if you've heard this one. She frowned up at me. One night in high school, there was a party. A girl named Hannah Insinga snuck out of her house and went to this party, and the next day she was reported missing by her parents. Mimi looked down when I said Hannah's name. I continued. Some people remembered seeing her there. Some didn't. Some said she might have left the party with a guy. Some said, no way, she didn't leave with anyone. A soft hitch in Mimi's breath had me thinking I might be onto something. And now, 20 years later, everyone who saw Hannah leave the party with a boy is dying one by one. Does any of that ring a bell? Mimi lowered her head as if unable to face us. Cookie put a supportive hand on her shoulder.
You're almost there, but Hannah didn't leave the party with just a boy. She left with several of us.
Cookie stilled. What do you mean? She means, I said, fighting through the sorrow that suddenly consumed her, that pushed against my chest, that several kids took her body out of the house that night. She was already dead, and they went together to bury her. Am I right? It was the only explanation that made sense. She wiped a tear with the blood-soaked napkin.
Yes, seven of us. There were seven.
Cookie tried to stifle a gasp behind her hand. I kneeled down to Mimi's eye level. Someone at that party killed her, and you saw it, perhaps? Did they threaten to do the same to you?
Please stop, she said, sobbing openly now.
Did they bully you at school, push you in the halls, knock books out of your hands, just to remind you, just to keep you on their leash?
I can't,
I decided to begin with Tommy Zapata, to leave Kyle Kirsch for my grand finale. Did it have anything to do with the car dealer you had lunch with, Tommy Zapata? She gasped and looked up at me.
How did you know that?
Tommy was found dead 3 days ago. Her hands flew over her mouth. They're bringing murder charges against your husband if we don't prove he didn't do it soon.
No!
She jumped up and headed for the door.
No, he didn't do anything. They don't understand.
I followed suit and clutched onto her arm. Mimi, stop. We can help, but I have to know what happened.
But
you have to sit down and explain this to me so I can get both you and your husband out of trouble. What happened that night? She hesitated, wavered, then with a shaky sigh, folded herself into the office chair once more.
We were at the party, and I'd went to an upstairs bathroom with a friend. I wasn't feeling well.
The friend was most likely Janelle York.
We were at Tommy Zapata's house. His parents were out of town.
She turned a desperate gaze on me.
We were having fun, you know, just messing around and listening to music. But my friend and I went into the bathroom off Tommy's parents' bedroom. I guess we were in there a while just talking.
Then we heard voices, so we turned out the light and cracked open the door to look. We figured someone was making out on his parents' bed and we were going to scare them. It's a joke.
Cookie found a clean tissue and offered it to Mimi. She took a moment to blow her nose.
But it was three of the boys, three of the football players. They had Hannah on the bed. They were having sex with her.
She sobbed into the tissue. Was one of them Tommy? I asked.
No, he was making out in the corner.
So he had definitely been there, and now he was dead. After taking a moment to recover, she continued.
I don't think it was actually consensual. Hannah was so drunk. Then she threw up on one of the boys. He got off her and started yelling. He scared her. She stumbled to her feet and tried to walk to the door. That's when it happened. I'm not sure if the boy pushed her or what. It was hard to see. But she fell into the corner of the Zapata's dresser and busted her head open. Tommy tried to stop the bleeding, but she was dead in moments.
I found the fact that she wasn't telling us Kyle's name interesting. Was she that afraid of him? She looked up at us beseechingly.
It was an accident. It could have been explained, but the boys freaked out. For like half an hour, they paced and cursed and tried to figure out what to do. Tommy's dad worked at the cemetery, and one of them came up with a plan. So the guys were going to wrap her in some towels, and that's when they found us. I was crying really hard. The guys freaked out even more.
Did they hurt you? Cookie asked, her expression almost as desperate as Mimi's.
No, she said, not really. They wrapped Hannah in some towels and cleaned up the blood, and after everyone left the party, they carried her to Tommy's truck. After throwing two shovels into the bed, they made us get in the back with them. Then they drove us to the cemetery.
Of course, I said, having a V8 moment. The numbers you wrote on the bathroom wall by Hannah's name. I knew they looked familiar. They're plot addresses. They buried her in a fresh grave.
Not just in one, underneath one.
When my brows furrowed in question, she said,
the mortuary had already dug a grave for a funeral that was to be held the next day. The guys dug down some more while we watched.
Her voice cracked with the memory.
We just watched. We didn't even try to stop them. If ever there was a time to do the right thing.
Cookie took both her hands into her own. This wasn't your fault, Mimi.
But they said it was, she argued. They said that we helped, that we were accomplices, and that if we said anything, they would kill us. Oh, my God, we were so scared.
The fear that had consumed her for 20 years reared up and took hold of her again. It washed over me in suffocating waves. I fought it, filled my lungs with air to keep at bay as she continued.
We thought for sure they would kill us, too, but they didn't. They put Hannah's body in and covered her up. The next day, they buried Mr. Romero right on top of her, and nobody knew.
The fact that it was somewhat of an accident and not a planned murder was the only reason in my mind Mimi and Janelle survived. If those boys had been true killers, utterly remorseless, I doubted I would ever have met Mimi.
I was shaking so hard I could barely breathe, she said, shaking almost as hard right then. And you were right about the bullying.
She looked up at me.
They got more and more brazen, and it just became unbearable. I stopped going to school, and then finally begged my parents to let me live with my grandmother here. I just couldn't live there any longer. I couldn't look at Mr. and Mrs. Insinga any longer, knowing what they must have been going through.
Did they offer Janelle the same treatment? I asked. She looked up at me, confused.
Janelle?
Janelle York. Her face morphed from sadness to disgust.
She became nothing more than their lapdog. She was a part of it, part of them.
I don't understand. I rose to my feet.
You two were hiding.
She frowned at me.
I wasn't hiding with Janelle in the bathroom, she said, almost appalled that I would even think such a thing. She'd been in the room with them, making out with Tommy on a beanbag in the corner. She would have done anything for him. When he freaked out about his parents finding out what happened, it was her idea to bury Hannah underneath that grave.
I turned up my palms. Then who was hiding with you? And who was having sex with Hannah? She swallowed hard. I could tell she didn't want to tell us.
It was Jeff. Jeff Hargrove was on her.
Wait, Jeff Hargrove was having sex with Hannah?
Yes, well, at that time. I think they took turns.
And who were they? She thought back with a helpless shrug. Besides Jeff, there was Nick Velasquez and Anthony Richardson.
What the hell? Mimi, who was in the bathroom with you?
She lowered her head.
This is confidential, right?
I kneeled down and peered into her eyes. I can't promise this won't get out, Mimi, but we need to know who was there.
With a heavy sigh, she said reluctantly,
Kyle Kirsch.
Her answer knocked the wind out of me.
You mean Kyle had nothing to do with Hannah's death?
She seemed surprised.
No, not at all. They treated Kyle almost as badly as they treated me, only he was the son of the sheriff, so they didn't go quite so far with him.
She gripped my arm, her fingernails sinking into my sleeve.
You would have to know Jeff Hargrove. He's crazy. Sheriff or no sheriff, he would have killed us both.
I fell back on my heels. Okay, so then what? I asked, thinking aloud. My incredulous gaze landed on Cookie.
Kyle, what? He didn't want all of this surfacing, so he's killing everyone?
What?
Mimi almost screamed, her fingernails digging in, setting up shop.
Kyle would never do that. He would never hurt anyone.
Mimi, I said, my voice sympathetic. Everyone started dying about 2 seconds after Kyle Kirsch announced his intention to run for a seat in the Senate. That's a little hard to explain away.
I know everyone started dying, but nobody knows who's doing it, even Kyle. He's scared shitless.
She glanced at Cookie.
Hired all kinds of bodyguards.
After a moment lost in thought, she shook her head.
It has to be Jeff Hargrove. He was always nuts.
Cookie leaned forward. Mimi, Jeff Hargrove drowned in his swimming pool 2 weeks ago. Pure, unadulterated shock overtook Mimi's features. She was just as confused as the rest of us, and I was utterly lost. And Nick Velasquez allegedly committed suicide 3 weeks ago.
I knew that. Anthony Richardson did too, but I didn't know about Jeff.
Sweetheart, they're all dead. Everyone who was in that room except for you and Kyle. There's no other explanation.
No, she said, shaking her head in denial. That's just not possible. If you knew Kyle...
Were you too involved? I asked her. Love was not only blind, it often careened into blithering Idiotsville as well. She cast me another one of her looks of incredulity. She was really good at those.
No, we weren't. You don't understand.
She stopped and bit her bottom lip, then said with an acquiescent sigh,
Nobody knows this, nobody. But Kyle is gay. We were in the bathroom talking about boys.
Oh, for the love of hush puppies, this just got better and better. Okay, let me think, I said, rubbing my forehead. Tell me again, why did you have dinner with Tommy Zapata the other day? Her brows crinkled.
He asked to meet with me. I was kind of scared not to. He said he was being blackmailed and he just couldn't live with himself any longer.
Blackmail tended to convince people they could no longer live with what they'd done. It was amazing.
He said he'd met with Kyle and told him he was going to step forward and confess everything, take responsibility for his part in all of it. He asked me if I would back him. He was going to tell the authorities how they threatened Kyle and me, how they forced us to go with them.
This was still not making a lick of sense. Kyle's family has money, and you are married to a wealthy man, yet neither of you were being blackmailed? I asked, incredulous.
No, but we think we know who was doing it.
Really?
Tommy thought it was Jeff Hargrove.
Wait, the guy voted most likely to go to prison for rape and murder? That Jeff Hargrove?
Yes. Tommy thought he'd gotten into some financial trouble and decided Tommy, who owned a car dealership, would be an easy target. And Tommy was right. I checked into Jeff's financial records.
Dang, she was good.
And he'd made deposits on the same days as Tommy's drops. 3 of them.
Wow. And yet both Tommy and Jeff were dead.
Kyle called me later, she continued. He told me Tommy had actually apologized because he was likely going to ruin his political career.
That's a pretty good reason to kill, Mimi, Cookie said.
No, Kyle didn't care. He was going to step forward with Tommy. He was going to give a speech today with Tommy by his side and announce what happened.
Gutsy. Maybe he changed his mind. She sighed in frustration.
You would have to know, Kyle. What you're implying is so against his character, it's unreal. He felt like he was living a lie anyway, hiding his homosexuality.
I ran a hand down my face. My head hurt, and not entirely because of the concussion. I thought I had this thing figured out. That's what I got for thinking. Okay, I said, my voice airy with frustration. So after you left for Albuquerque, what did Kyle do? Did they ease up on him? She shrugged, her mouth a grim line. Kyle's a good actor. He eventually convinced Jeff he was on their side. Then, when school was out, he did the same thing I did. He left and spent the whole summer with his grandmother. So, after you met with Tommy Zapata, did someone threaten you? Is that why you ran? It wasn't long after that I realized everybody was dying. I knew that my family was in danger. As long as I was a target and they were around me, they would not be safe. So I just got in a cab one day and ran. If not for that fire, I'd be in Spokane right now.
You kept yourself alive, Cookie said. Now we need to get you to safety.
Yeah, while I figure out what the hell is going on.
The lights flickered out, and an eerie silence fell over us. I shushed everyone, then squatted down and peeked out the office door. An emergency light down the hall showed a large body, most likely belonging to Hulk, sprawled on the floor.
Son of a bitch, I said, unable to quite believe it. They followed us?
I totally needed to pay more attention to who was on my ass. This was getting ridiculous.
Who?
Mimi asked, her high-pitched whisper traveling down the hall. Cookie shushed her with a finger over her mouth. I took hold of Mimi's hand while Cookie took the other, and we rushed out of the office toward a back exit I'd spotted on the way in. We weaved around boxes and bags as quietly as we could until we came to the back door. Thankfully, the rain pelting the roof offered us some cover. There was an emergency release on the door, but it was set off an alarm, so I was hesitant to go through it. Then again, maybe an alarm was exactly what we needed. I led everyone to a darkened corner near the door, and we huddled there as I tried to decide if I wanted to draw that kind of attention. "Hey, boss," Angel said, appearing at my side. I jumped, startling Cookie and Mimi, then scowled at him.
"Again? Really?" I whispered.
"What are you doing?"
"Running from bad guys. What else do I do on a regular basis?"
"Who's she talking to?" Mimi asked.
Cookie panicked a moment, then said, "She's rehearsing for a play."
"Now?"
"So, I should just leave you to it?" Angel asked with a husky giggle. I rolled my eyes and turned to Cookie.
"Okay," I whispered. "Have your phone ready. You two run through that door and don't stop for anything. I'll close it and try to barricade it from the outside."
"With what?"
Cookie asked, her whispery voice squeaking in fear.
"Cook," I said, wrapping a hand around hers, "have I ever let you down?"
"I'm not worried about you letting me down. I'm worried about you letting you down. These people are cold-blooded killers, Charlie."
"I think I'm going to be sick," Mimi said.
They were both shaking so bad, I had serious doubts they would make it to safety without collecting at least a couple of fractures from a fall.
"Cook, you have to get Mimi out of here. She's counting on us. You can do this."
She took a deep breath.
"Right. Okay, I'll do it. But hurry. You're a much better shot than I am."
She took out a 380 from her bag.
"Holy cow," I said.
I had yet to get my Glock back from the abandoned motel crime scene. Cookie rocked like a rock star. But judging by the weight of it...
"So, do you have bullets to go with it?"
"Oh." She dug in her bag again and brought out a fully loaded clip. She handed it over with a smile.
"Hurry,"
she said as I locked the clip into place and chambered around. The clicking sound echoed loudly, and I cringed. The rain seemed to muffle it a bit, but anyone within a stone's throw would have heard it and been clued into the fact that I had a gun.
"Do you know how many there are?" I asked Angel.
"Just one, the mean one from the motel."
"Evo Murtaugh?"
I asked. "Okay," he said with a shrug.
"Damn him," I said, scanning the area. "Damn him to hell."
"She's really good," Mimi said. "Dramatic."
"Aw," I turned to her with a smile.
"Thank you."
It was Cookie's turn to roll her eyes. After an exasperated sigh, she took Mimi's hand and charged toward the door, slamming into it really hard. Her second attempt was much more productive. When the door opened, as expected, it set off a shrill alarm that reminded me a lot of Mimi's scream, and as I followed them through it, two things happened simultaneously. Cookie stumbled down the steps outside,
and a wicked, wicked knife sliced across my back. Chapter 18. If at first you don't succeed, failure may be your thing. T-shirt. For some odd reason, people wanted to carve me up like a jack-o'-lantern this week, probably because Halloween was just around the corner. As a general rule, knives hurt. I fell forward, stumbling on Mimi, who had stumbled on Cookie, and prayed to God I wouldn't shoot anyone. In Cookie's defense, it was raining wildcats and rabid dogs. As we tumbled into a heap at the bottom of the steps, Angel pushed at the door with all his might, God bless his freaky little gangbanger soul, basically slamming it in evil Murtaugh's face. The door hit with a loud thud, and the knife clattered down the steps. "Woohoo, Angel, that was awesome," I said, knocking Cookie in the knee with my concussed head. That'd teach her. "Run," Angel said, annoyed. He was irritable all of a sudden. My heart jumped into overdrive as we scrambled to our feet and ran down the alley where it was darkest. If he happened to have a gun, which I suspected he did, he would be able to pick us off easily if we ran for the street. The lights were too bright to offer any cover. The way I saw it, we could run around the building and hightail it for the cafe. I prayed Norma had a key to lock the doors, and hopefully that alarm would bring the cavalry. Cookie's gaze darted wildly about as she ran. That woman could move pretty darn fast when she had to. But before we got 20 feet, the door swung open and crashed against the brick exterior of the building. Mimi screamed really helpfully, in case someone didn't hear the ear-splitting alarm. "Run!" I told them as I turned and aimed the gun, which was much harder than I'd anticipated with rain cascading in rivulets down my face. I fired one shot, and he ducked back into the building, allowing Cookie and Mimi time to get the heck out of Dodge. I quickly joined them. "What do I do?" Angel asked, reanimating his grasshopper in a skillet routine. "Whatever you can, sweetheart." I sprinted ahead and checked out the easement between the shelter and a candy-making factory next door. There were some crates and boxes, but it looked like we could make it through, and the obstacles might make decent cover should the need arise. Unfortunately, the need arose too soon. A shot sounded out, and Mimi fell to the ground with a squeak. She covered her head. I took aim and fired again, but not before he got off two more rounds. For the first time in my life, I was in a shootout. A real, honest-to-goodness shootout with a bad guy, and apparently we both sucked. I aimed for his head and shot the light above it, and I had no idea what the hell he was aiming at, unless he was taking out the windows at the candy-making factory as part of some strategic maneuver to outwit us. Cookie and Mimi were close to a dumpster, and they headed that way for cover. Evil Murtaugh was racing toward us when Angel tripped him. His gun crashed to the ground and went sliding. "Get his gun!" I yelled to Angel as I bolted across the alley to join Cookie. He glared at me and threw his arms in the air. "It doesn't work that way!" Oh, jeez, there were rules. "Are either of you shot?" I asked breathlessly as I took position behind the trash bin. "I don't think so," Mimi said. "How long do you think it'll take the cops to get here?" "Longer than we have," I said truthfully. Angel had kicked the man's gun away, but it took him mere moments to track it down and head our direction. Now we were stuck behind a dumpster with nowhere to run. I scrambled past the women to see if there was an opening in the fence bordering us. No such luck. It had to have been 10 feet high, and since it was cinder block, I doubted my ability to crash through it without a really long running start. If we could climb onto the dumpster, we could scale it, but that would mean exposing ourselves to evil, and he probably had more bullets left than I did. "I'm sorry, Mimi," I said. She'd been hiding for a freaking reason, and we led the bad guy right to her. Way to go, Charlotte.
"No, please don't be sorry."
She started crying and shaking uncontrollably, and my heart clenched in response.
"None of this is your fault. It's mine, and mine alone."
I did a quick sweep of the perimeter. Evil Murtaugh was almost upon us, gun raised and at the ready. I might could actually shoot him if he got within arm's reach and stood really still.
"If I had just done the right thing 20 years ago.
"Mimi," Cookie said, wrapping an arm around her. Before I could change my mind, I raised the .380 and stepped from behind the dumpster, feeling more exposed than I'd ever felt before. Discounting that one time in Mexico City. Freaking tequila.
You hit me!
I shouted through the pounding rain. I had no choice but to summon Reyes. I hated to bug since he was being tortured and all, but... An evil grin spread across my opponent's face, making me realize why he was known round these parts as Evil Murtaugh.
Reyesil!
Without another thought, Evil Murtaugh squeezed. Wait, I wasn't finished. But the world slowed, and the bullet came to a rest in front of me.
Didn't we discuss your timing issues earlier?
I glanced to my right as Reyes looked on, his robe undulating around him in glorious waves, as if he were an ocean unto himself. Then I turned back to the expression of rage lining Evil Murtaugh's face, to the raindrops hanging in midair, to the bullet as it trailed through the atmosphere toward me, splashing playfully through a drop. I could almost see the concussion of air as it propelled forward. It hovered mere inches from my heart. If time slipped, if it skipped a microsecond into the future, the bullet would hit home. How is this possible? I asked Reyes. I saw him shrug in my periphery.
That's what happens when someone shoots at point-blank range, he explained,
his deep voice soothing despite my predicament. No, this. Everything just stops, or, well, slows down a lot.
It's a world we live in, Dutch.
He looked down at me, his robed head tilted as if in curiosity.
Well, do you want me to take care of him for you?
I did. I really did. But that one nagging issue still hung between us like a loose string on a sweater. I wanted to pull at it, but I knew if I did, I'd risk unraveling everything. For some reason, that ranked right up there with chihuahuas and weapons of mass destruction. I just couldn't let it go. Are you going to tell me where you are?
You're going to bring that up now?
Yes.
Then no.
Then I can take care of this myself. The moment I said it, the moment the words slipped from my mouth, I realized there might be more to the rumors of my lack of mental stability than I'd allowed myself to believe. Wasn't the fact that I needed his help the reason I summoned him in the first place?
Sure about that?
Abso-freaking-lutely. It was official. I was psychotic. With that growl thing he did that sent shivers down my spine, he turned from me in anger.
You are the most stubborn.
Me? I asked, incredulous. I'm stubborn. Oh, yeah, just lock me up and throw away the key. He was in front of me at once.
As a mule.
Because I don't want you to commit suicide? That makes me stubborn? He leaned down, his face inches from mine, even though I couldn't actually see it.
Abso-freaking-lutely.
He totally stole that. I set my jaw. I don't need your help.
Fine, but you might want to just...
He put a finger on my shoulder and eased me to the left out of the bullet's path.
Next time, duck.
The feeling each time the world rushed back was comparable to a speeding freight train crashing into me. The force sucked the air out of my lungs, and the sound reverberated against my chest, echoing in my bones as the bullet picked up where it left off and flew harmlessly past. I stumbled to the side and had just enough time to look back at Evil Murtaugh as he blinked in surprise and aimed again. If I had been paying attention, if the roar of thunder and rain had not been so deafening, I might have heard the car speeding up the alley, and so might have Evil Murtaugh. As it stood, we were both a tad surprised when a black SUV came barreling toward us. The driver slammed on the brakes and skidded into a spin that swept Evil Murtaugh up like a tornado and threw him against the candy-making factory while leaving me untouched. I stood a long moment, blinking against the rain pelting my face, as the SUV screeched to a halt and Ulrich of the Three Stooges jumped out of the back seat. He strode to Evil Murtaugh as the passenger side glass rolled down. Mr. Smith sat grinning at me.
I swear, Juicy, you get into more trouble than my great Aunt May, and she's senile, he said.
I looked over at Ulrich. He checked Evil Murtaugh's pulse, then belted him one, I was guessing for good measure. Angel fell to his knees in relief and then collapsed onto the ground in a dramatic rendition of Death of a Salesman. How did you find us? I asked Smith.
We've been looking for this guy for quite a while. You were the most logical person to follow.
Are you cops? I asked.
Not hardly.
Then what the heck? I heard sirens in the distance and knew they would leave soon. I looked over at Mr. Chow, a.k.a. Stuntman Dave. Are you sure you should be driving with your injuries?
Ulrich belted evil again. Now he's just being obtuse, Smith said.
I'm out of here. Angel sat up and saluted me before he disappeared. I like the saluting thing. That might have to become standard operating procedure at the office.
Charlie, are you okay? Cookie asked from the shadows.
I doubted she saluted me. Super duper, stay there. I still had no idea who these men were. They could want Mimi just as dead as evil Murtaugh did.
Mr. Chow climbed out of the driver's side and came around. I headed him off, blocked the opening between the dumpster and cinder block fence. If he wanted Mimi Jacobs, he was going to have to get through me, which should take him about 5/7 of a second, give or take. He leaned to the side and looked over my shoulder. Satisfied, he looked back at me, his hair already dripping wet. When he raised a hand to my face, I flinched, but only because I thought he was going to break my neck or something. Stuff like that tended to happen to me. Instead, he ran his fingers over my brows, pushing my dripping wet bangs out of my eyes. Then he bowed slightly and headed back to the driver's side.
She's alive, he told Smith,
and I realized he was talking about Mimi. I don't suppose you're going to tell me who you work for, I asked him.
You might say we work for the big guy.
So you work for God? He fought a grin.
Come down a step, as in commander-in-chief.
Then this does have something to do with a seat in the Senate.
Something, yes.
Damn, they don't mess around. Wait, so Kyle Kirsch did this after all?
He squinted his eyes and shrugged.
Look farther north.
Oh, come on, that's all you're giving me?
We did just save your life, he said, brows raised.
I snorted. Please, I totally had that.
Smith chuckled and shook his head.
I have to say, this was the most interesting assignment I've ever been on.
He leveled a regret-filled gaze on me.
I'll miss you. And your boxer shorts.
He looked past me into the shadows.
Get that woman to the police. She has quite a story to tell.
After one more solid pounding, Ulrich strode past me with a nod and climbed in the back seat. I had a sneaking suspicion I would never see them again. As they drove off, Cookie and Mimi tackled me from behind, and I was soon ensconced in the most suffocating group hug I'd ever been ensconced in. Blue and red lights undulated over the buildings as a plethora of police and emergency vehicles cordoned off the alley. Two EMTs loaded a handcuffed evil Murtaugh into the back of an ambulance, while another EMT was seeing to a concussed Hulk. He moaned a lot. I knew how he felt. I stepped over to watch them load evil just as two men in crisp suits walked up to me. There seemed to be a lot of crisp suits around lately. Dillard's must have had a sale.
Miss Davidson?
One of them asked.
I nodded. Now that all the excitement was over, my back was stinging. Evil Murtaugh had ruined a perfectly good jacket and left a bit of a fissure across my spine. I squirmed in my jacket trying to ease the discomfort.
I'm Agent Foster with the FBI.
He held up his ID.
And this is Special Agent Powers.
Yeah, right, I said with a snort. I've heard that before.
Agent Foster's expression didn't change.
So we were told. That's why we'd like to talk to you before we question this man.
I looked into the ambulance at Evil.
Sucks when the real deal shows up.
I can't leave you alone for a minute, Uncle Bob said as he strode toward me.
I think I'm probably off to the station, I told the agents.
We'll meet you there.
Are you injured? How's your head?
Uncle Bob asked. He was such a softy. Better than yours. Have you considered electroshock therapy?
He blew out a long breath.
You're still mad at me.
You think?
As it turned out, Evil Murtaugh and Evil Riggs were related, cousins or something. Big surprise. They both hailed from Minnesota and had been in and out of trouble their whole lives, but nothing like murder, at least not that we knew of. The station was like a melting potty of old and new cases by the time we arrived. Morning was burning its way across the horizon as Cookie sat with Mimi in an interview room for support while Mimi gave her statement. They'd both been wrapped in blankets and given hot chocolate. All things considered, they looked pretty comfy. Mimi's parents had shown up and were in there with her as well. Her father couldn't let go of her and kept her in his embrace, which made it difficult for her to drink her cocoa, but I doubted she minded. One was never too old to revel in the embrace of your dad. From what I could tell, a lot of old baggage was being unpacked, dirty underwear and all. Uncle Bob was working on getting Warren's charges dropped, and he'd called in Kyle Kirsch, who was due any moment.
"I don't think they were paid enough," Yubi said as he walked up, a pile of papers in his hands.
I was pouring creamer into a cup of coffee while trying to keep a blanket around my shoulders, mostly to hide the slice across my back. I didn't think I could stand another round of superglue.
"The Cox cousins' bank accounts show cash deposits of $50,000 each."
"So who are the Cox cousins again?" He sighed. It was funny.
"The man who kidnapped you? One of them just tried to kill you in a dark alley? Art and William Cox? Any of this ringing a bell?"
"Of course. I just wanted to make you say Cox again." "And as determined as they were," I said, taking a sip, "they were probably promised a lot more once the job was done."
"I'm sure. But we can't trace the deposits. And the dead gunman from the motel was a jailhouse chum of theirs. We're still looking into his financial records, too."
I looked over as Kyle Kirsch hurried into the station, two bodyguards on his trail. I recognized him from his campaign posters. He stopped to ask the desk sergeant a question, and Mimi came barreling out of the interview room toward him. She ran into his arms.
"Are you okay?" she asked, and he gaped at her.
"Me? Are you okay? What happened?" he asked, hugging her to him again.
"This man came after me, and Cookie and her boss Charlie saved my life."
I cringed. It was nice of her to leave out the part where we were the reason she almost got killed in the first place. Uncle Bob strolled up to him and offered a hand.
"Congressman," he said.
"Are you Detective Davidson?"
he asked, shaking his hand.
"Yes, sir. Thank you for coming in. Can I get you anything before we start?"
Kyle had agreed to give a statement, insisting he had nothing to hide. He hugged Mimi again, a sad smile on his face.
"I guess this is it," he said to her.
"We had to do this sometime."
"That we did."
I wondered if they would be arrested for not coming forth earlier. I hoped not. They were victims in all of this as well.
"This is Charlie Davidson,"
Mimi said when she saw me hovering. Kyle took my hand.
"I owe you everything."
"Warren!"
Mimi ran into her husband's arms as he practically stumbled into the station, looking as harried as usual. I spoke to Kyle under my breath.
"I hate to have to tell you this, but I thought you were the one behind these murders for quite some time."
He smiled sadly and understanding.
"I don't blame you, but I promise," he said to Uncle Bob. "I had nothing to do with them. I'm not exactly innocent, but I'm not guilty of murder."
He took out his cell phone.
"I know we have an interview, but would you mind if I called my mother? I couldn't get a hold of my dad. I think he went fishing, and he never carries his cell. I just want to let them know where I am and what's going on before they see it on the news."
"Not at all," Yubi said.
"Thank you." He spoke over his shoulder as he walked away. "She's visiting my grandmother in Minnesota."
Uncle Bob and I both froze. I stepped up and placed a hand on Kyle's, lowering the phone from his ear. He frowned and closed it.
"Is something wrong?"
"Kyle, Congressman."
"Kyle is fine, Ms. Davidson."
"The murder suspects were hired henchmen from Minnesota. Did you tell your mother or grandmother what was going on? What happened in Ruiz? Or even that Tommy Zapata wanted to step forward and confess what he did?" Kyle blinked in surprise, contemplated what I'd said, then turned from me, his face a mask of astonishment.
"Kyle, everyone who was in that room with Hannah Insinga is dead, except for you and Mimi. And trust me, Mimi was not going to see another day if those men had anything to say about it."
I touched him gently on the shoulder. "That leaves you." He covered his eyes with a hand and breathed deeply.
"Your mother didn't happen to borrow $100,000 from you recently, did she?"
"No," he said, facing me with a resigned expression. "My mother comes from money. She would never have had to borrow any from me."
That explained the ritzy house in Taos that she lived in with a retired sheriff.
"Do you think she's capable of...
My mother is more than capable, I promise you.
A bitterness suddenly edged his voice, cold and unforgiving.
I told her everything that happened that night 20 years ago. She made me swear not to tell my father. She said I would be arrested, that people would say I was just as much to blame as anyone. The minute school let out for the summer, she sent me to my grandmother's.
She knew all along? Uncle Bob asked.
He nodded.
When I told her I was going to step forward with Tommy Zapata, she went ballistic. She said nothing mattered more than the Senate, and eventually the presidency.
He laughed, a harsh, acidic sound.
It would never have worked anyway. They would have found out about my past, my lifestyle. People like me don't get to be president, but she insisted that I try, beginning with a seat in the Senate.
He leveled a hard gaze on me.
That woman is nuts.
Maybe we should get that statement now, Uncle Bob said.
He led him to a separate interview room while I hung back. My head was still pounding out a symphony, but it had moved from Beethoven's Fifth to Gershwin's Summertime. I did feel better about one thing. My stepmother may be nuts, but she wasn't a murderer. Not that I knew of, anyway. I took 2 ibuprofen and sat on one of the chairs in the waiting room. My lids grew heavier than I would have liked, but I wanted to wait on Cookie and see what Uncle Bob came up with. I was pretty sure we just solved a murder mystery. Still, my lids didn't care. The world blurred, dipped, spun a little, did the hokey-pokey, and turned itself around. Then my dad came in. I figured he'd heard what happened and came to check on me. Hey, Dad. I pried my body out of the chair and gave him a groggy hug. I hadn't seen him since the night of the attack, which made me a very bad daughter.
What are you doing here?
He asked, holding me tight. What are you doing here?
I still have to give my statement on the attack.
Oh, duh.
Why are you wrapped in a blanket? What's going on?
Dad, I'm fine, just the usual, PI stuff and all that.
Charlie, he said, exasperated, you need to find another job.
I scoffed as Denise and Gemma walked in. I was surprised to see the old ball and chain with him as well as my sister.
What are you doing here? Denise asked. I thought she wasn't coming.
She glanced at Dad questioningly. He gritted his teeth. Sucks when the old hag spills the beans. Gemma raised a cordial hand in greeting, then yawned. She looked as exhausted as I felt.
And why wasn't I coming? I asked Dad.
He shook his head.
We're just going over some things. I didn't think you'd want to be here,
he said, stumbling over his tongue. This was interesting.
You have to give a statement from your perspective later. I didn't want to take up your time or influence your testimony.
Well, I guess we're in luck, I said, a humongous smile brightening my face. I'm already here. I'd love to join in the fun.
Dad worked his jaw as Uncle Bob joined us.
The congressman is writing everything down, Yubi said to me. I think he's going to be a while. We can go over those tapes now.
Tapes? I asked, all innocence and virtue.
Yes, the tapes of Caruso when he was calling your dad. Leland started recording them. But I have to admit, bro, he said to Dad, I'm not sure Denise and Gemma will want to hear these.
Certainly we do, Denise said, strolling past them toward the conference room.
My dad was so whipped it was embarrassing.
This is awesome, I said, following her with a new bounce in my step, killing 27 birds with one stone. Who knew a visit to the PD would be so darn productive?
She's still a little miffed, Yubi explained to Dad.
Apparently this was a community event. We, meaning the family and a couple other detectives, sat around the conference table while cops of every size and shape, mostly nice and really nice, lined the walls. Even Taft showed up. It was interesting, but for the life of me, I couldn't figure out why everyone was so fascinated in these tapes, especially Denise and Gemma.
Who should I kill first, Davidson?
The speaker on the recording, Mark Caruso, asked. For the most part, he had good vocal projection, decent pronunciation. He just needed to tweak his tone to better reflect his mood.
Whose death will bring you to your knees?
That was a great opening. He'd really thought out these little speeches of his.
Whose death will send you spiraling down a pit so deep and dark you'll never be able to claw out of it?
I felt his question was more rhetorical than inquisitive.
Everyone in the room took turns slashing furtive glances in Dad's direction, wanting to see what pent-up emotions Caruso could stir in him. This situation nailed why reality TV was such a hit. The human appetite to witness tragedy, to observe the subtle difference between pain and anguish, to see each emotion twist the features of a normally smiling face, was irresistible. It wasn't their fault. A certain amount of morbidity was innate in each of us, part of our biological makeup, our DNA.
"Your wife, Denise?" Caruso said, as though asking permission.
My stepmother gasped softly and tossed a hand over her mouth at the mention of her name. Dutifully, tears sprang to her eyes. But I had mad skill at reading people, and I could tell she was getting off on the sympathetic gazes sliding her way. Even more than that, however, I could feel the relief that swallowed her as she glanced toward me, because Caruso had come after me, not her. I supposed I couldn't blame her for that, really, but I could have done without her fix for attention at my expense. Caruso waited for a reaction.
"No," he said, his voice resigned. "No, you need to lose a daughter, just like I did. How about Gemma, the pretty one?"
Though Gemma had hardly moved an inch the entire time, she stilled. Her face paled, and her breathing stopped for what seemed like a full minute before she looked up at Dad. Denise wrapped an arm into his and leaned into him to offer support in her superficial way. But he neither looked up at Gemma nor acknowledged his wife's ministrations. He was lost inside himself, a shell where my father had once been. Oddly enough, he was sweating 9mm. Why now? It was said and done, the guy was back behind bars. And still, he did not answer the man. Then everyone waited, knowing what was coming next, who was coming next.
"Or how about that pistol of yours?" Caruso asked, his gravelly voice enjoying the moment. "What's her name?" "Oh, yes, Charlotte."
He said my name slowly, as though he relished every sound, every consonant as it rolled off his tongue. I felt each gaze present snap in my direction, but I lowered my eyes and kept them down. I could especially feel Uncle Bob's for some reason. He had always had such a soft spot for me, one that I took advantage of every chance I got. But then Dad spoke, his voice crystal clear in the recording, each note strained, each syllable forced. He hadn't said a word when Caruso mentioned Denise or Gemma, but when my name came up, he broke.
"Please," he said, his voice hoarse with the emotion he held at bay. "Not Charlie. Please, not Charlie."
My heart stopped. The air in the room thickened until I thought I would suffocate on it. The truth of what was happening washed over me in waves of such shock, I sat utterly stupefied for a solid minute before glancing up. Now everyone had cast gazes of sympathy toward my father. They saw a man in anguish. I saw a man, a veteran cop and detective, who had made a decision. My father lowered his head, and from underneath his lashes cast furtive, sorrowful glances at me. To say I was taken aback by his plea would be the understatement of the century. The whisper of emotion he fought tooth and nail to control was not the pain of fear, but the pain of guilt. His eyes locked onto mine, a silent apology dripping from each lash, and the agitation that overcame me pushed me out of my chair like a bully on a playground. I stumbled to my feet, the blanket and the rest of the recording forgotten, and scanned the faces around me. Denise was appalled that her husband was begging for my life when he hadn't begged for hers. Her shallow sense of reality simply didn't run deep enough to grasp the truth. It must have been nice to see the world so one-dimensionally. But Uncle Bob knew. He sat with mouth agape, staring at Dad like he'd lost his mind. And Gemma knew. Gemma, the one person on planet Earth I didn't want or need sympathy from. Thankfully, any tears that might have surfaced from the knowledge that my father had practically painted a target on my forehead stayed behind a wall of bewilderment. My lungs were still paralyzed, as if the air had been knocked out of me. They started to burn, and I had to force myself to breathe as I stared in utter disbelief. My father, a 20-year veteran of the Albuquerque Police Department, was way too smart to do something so incredibly stupid.
and my Uncle Bob knew it. I could see the shock and anger mingling behind his brown eyes. He was just as stunned as I was. The look on my father's face was reprehensible. The clueless look on my stepmother's as her gaze darted back and forth between the two of us was almost comical. But there were three other people in the room who'd figured it out. Uncle Bob, I could understand, but I couldn't believe that even Taft had figured it out. He had planted a surprised look on me that bordered on apologetic. But the look of incredulity on Gemma's face was more than I could bear. She stared hard at our father, her face a picture of stupefaction. Her PhD in psychology was paying off. She knew that our father had chosen her over me, had chosen our stepmother over me. My feet carried me back until I felt a door handle nudge my hip. I reached behind me and turned the knob just as my father stood up.
"Charlie, wait," he said as I rushed out the door.
The hall opened up to a sea of desks with phones ringing and keyboards clicking. I hurried through them.
"Charlie, please stop," I heard my dad call behind me.
And let him see the drooling mess I'd become? Absolutely not. But he was faster than I'd given him credit for. He caught my arm in his long, slender hand and pulled me around to face him. It was then that I realized my tears had broken free. He was blurry, and I slammed my lid shut and wiped my face with the back of my free hand.
"Charlie."
"Not now." I jerked out of his grasp and started toward the exit again.
"Charlie,"
he called out again and caught me just as I was heading out the door. He pulled me back inside, and in my attempt to get free, I jerked my arm out of his grip. He grabbed me again, and I jerked again, over and over, until my palm whipped across his face so hard the sound echoed throughout the precinct. A silence fell over the room, and every eye was suddenly focused on us. He touched his cheek where I slapped him.
"I deserve that, but let me explain."
We stood in the hall as a prickly kind of betrayal and humiliation kept me from hearing anything he had to say. I shut down. His words bounced back as though I had an invisible force field protecting me. And after delivering the best glare I could conjure, I turned and tried to walk away again, mostly because I saw Gemma and Denise coming. The thought of dealing with their indifference made me physically ill. I swallowed hard, fighting the bile in the back of my throat. Dad didn't grab me this time. He just braced an arm on the wall, blocking my path. He bent down to me, whispered in my ear,
"If I have to handcuff you and carry you kicking and screaming back to that room, I will."
I glowered at him as Denise hastened up to us in a huff.
"Did she just hit you?" she asked, appalled.
More than any other time in my life, I wanted to belt her as well. Where was Ulrich when I needed him?
"What are you going to do about it?" she asked my dad.
My dad. She glanced around the room, embarrassed that the other officers had seen my tantrum.
"Leland."
"Shut up,"
he said, his voice so quiet, so menacing, it left her speechless, for once. She raised a hand to cover her throat self-consciously. By law, any police officer who saw me hit him was duty-bound to arrest me. None stepped forward. Dad towered over me, his frame thin but rock solid, and I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that if he wanted to wrestle me back, he could. But he would be grabbing a cat by its tail. He would have a fight on his hands, one he would not soon forget. "Fine," I said, my voice just as soft as his. "Cuff me. Because I am not going back into that room so that everyone can feel sorry for me because my father sent a madman to kill his own daughter." He sighed, his shoulders crumpling.
"That's not what I did."
"Isn't it?"
Gemma asked, her voice hard as she stepped forward.
"Dad, that's exactly what you did."
"No, I mean..."
"She's so special. She's so unique,"
Gemma said, her words stealing my breath.
"She's so much more than even you know. And you sent him to her?"
"Gemma," Denise said, and I could feel the betrayal wafting off her.
"What are you talking about? He begged that man not to hurt Charlie."
Gemma seemed to be struggling for patience. She closed her blue eyes a long moment, then turned to her.
"Mom, did you not hear him?"
"I heard every word." Denise's voice was suddenly edged with bitterness.
"Mom," Gemma said, placing her hands on Denise's shoulders. "Open your eyes."
She said it softly, not wanting to hurt the hag's feelings. I had no such qualms.
"That's impossible."
Denise's jaw clenched in anger.
"See?"
she asked Dad, pointing at me just in case he didn't get it. I was still floored by Gemma's reaction. Quite frankly, I didn't think she gave a crap. Uncle Bob had been standing back, but he stepped forward now.
"Maybe we can take this to my office."
"I'm leaving," I said, so exhausted I thought I was going to be sick. I started out the door again.
"I knew he would lose,"
Dad said quietly after me. I stopped and turned around, waited.
"I knew he would end up like the others."
"What others? How many did he know about?" He stepped closer to me, leveled a beseeching gaze on me.
"Sweetheart, think about it. If he had gone after Gemma or Denise before we found him, they would be dead right now."
He was right, but that didn't make what he did hurt less. A twisting pain like I'd never felt in my life burrowed a hole in my chest, blocked off my passageway until I was gasping for air. And then it happened again. The fucking waterworks. God, could I be any more lame? Dad put a hand on my face.
"I knew you would be okay. You always are, my beautiful girl. You have, I don't know, a power or something, a force that follows you. You're the most amazing thing I've ever seen."
"But Dad," Gemma said in admonishment, "you should have told her. You should have prepared her."
Gemma was crying now, too. I couldn't believe it. I had entered the Twilight Zone. No more science fiction marathons for me. Gemma stepped to my side and hugged me, like really hugged, and damned if I didn't hug back. The bitterness and frustration from years of being the fuck-up, the odd girl out, the ugly duckling surfaced, and I could not, with my most concentrated effort, stop the sobs from racking my body. Dad joined in, whispering airy apologies as we embraced. I glanced up at Denise. She stood looking around, confused and embarrassed, and I almost felt sorry for her, only not. Then I motioned for Uncle Bob to join us. He stood with a dreamy smile on his face, but when he saw me motion toward us, he frowned and shook his head. I stabbed him with my laser-like death stare and motioned again. He blew out a long breath, then walked up and encircled us in his arms. So there we stood in the middle of an APD precinct, hugging and sobbing like celebrities in rehab.
"I can't breathe," Gemma said.
And we giggled, like we used to in high school. Chapter 19. Just because I don't care doesn't mean I don't understand. T-shirt. "No offense, but you've been a stone bitch to me for years." I blinked toward Gemma as we sat at a table in Dad's bar. Sammy was making us huevos rancheros, and Dad was filling our drink order. Denise had followed us there as well, and even Uncle Bob excused himself from work for a bite to eat.
"The congressman can wait," he'd said with a grin.
Right before he said,
"Care to explain a slice across your back?"
And then I patted his belly and said, "You know, if you keep eating like you do, I might have to start calling you Uncle Blob." And he said,
"That wasn't very nice."
And I said, "I know, that's why I said it." And he said, "Oh." And then we came here. Gemma shifted in her chair.
"I'm working on that, okay? I mean, do you know what it's like growing up with the amazing Charlie Davidson as a sister? The Charlie Davidson?"
I'd taken a sip of the iced tea Dad handed me and promptly choked on it. After a long and arduous coughing fit, I gaped at her as best I could.
"Are you kidding? You were always the perfect one. And you had issues with me?"
"Duh," she said, rolling her eyes. We were much more alike than I remembered. It was creepy.
"You don't even say hi to me," I argued. "You don't even look up when I walk into a room." "I didn't think you wanted me to."
Her gaze dropped self-consciously, along with my jaw.
"Why would you think such a ridiculous thing?" "Because you told me never to speak to you again, not even to say hi, and never under any circumstances was I ever to look at you again."
"What? I totally didn't remember that." "Well, there was that one time.
Dude, I was 9.
She shook her head.
Okay, there was that other time. 12?
Another shake.
Well, whatever, it was a long time ago. You didn't mention a time limit. You obviously don't remember, but I do, like it was yesterday. And besides that, you were always so secretive. I wanted to know so much more, and you wouldn't tell me.
She lifted her shoulders.
I always felt so left out of your life.
It was my turn to shift uncomfortably. Gemma, there are just some things you're better off not knowing.
And there she goes again, she said, tossing her arms into the air.
Dad had sat across from us, and he laughed.
She does the same thing to me. Always has.
Really, guys, I'm not kidding, I said.
Charlie is right, Denise said. She needs to keep that stuff to herself.
We were venturing into Denialville again, which was not nearly as fun as Margaritaville. There was nothing Denise liked less than talking about Charlie.
Denise, Dad said, placing a hand over hers, don't you think we've insisted on that long enough?
What do you mean?
I mean, you've always pushed her aside, refused to acknowledge her gifts, even when the evidence was staring you in the face.
She gasped.
I have never done any such thing.
Mom, Gemma said. She genuinely liked the woman. It boggled my mind.
Charlie is very special. You know that. You have to know that.
And that's why I did it, Dad said, his face turned down in shame. I knew that if Caruso came after you, sweetheart, you'd make it through unscathed. You always do.
I wouldn't say I'd come through the ordeal unscathed. I did have super glue holding my chest together. Well, for a few minutes. The cut healed almost immediately, but I didn't have the heart to tell the doctor, which was another aspect of me my family didn't know, how quickly I healed.
Dad, why didn't you just tell me about him?
A deep and sorrowful shame swallowed him whole, and I reached over and took his hand, afraid he would disappear.
I didn't want you to know anything about Caruso if it could be helped, about what I did. We were hoping to find him before he could act on his threats.
Dad, you can tell us anything, Gemma said.
But you don't understand. He was right.
Dad's face fell in disgrace.
I was the reason his daughter died. We were in a high-speed chase, and I fishtailed him. He skidded into the guardrail, bounced off, and careened down a short embankment on the other side. His car rolled, and his daughter was thrown out.
Dad, oh my gosh, I said, exasperated with him. That makes it his fault. Honestly, he's in a high-speed car chase with children in the car?
After a long sigh, he nodded.
I know, but it didn't make it any easier to stomach.
He glanced back at me.
I just couldn't tell you, but I did.
Your turn.
Oh, man, that was totally a setup,
Uncle Bob snorted.
He's right. You gotta give us something.
Holy macaroni. If they knew I was the Grim Reaper... No. No way I was going there.
For starters, Dad said, how did you do that thing the other night?
Do what? I asked as Donnie, Dad's Native American bartender, brought us our food. I took a moment to gaze at his chest. Then I snickered when I caught Gemma doing the same. We high-fived under the table. Hey, Donnie. He looked up and frowned.
Hey,
he said, his tone wary. He'd never taken to me.
That thing, Dad said when Donnie left. The way you moved.
He leaned in close and said under his breath,
Charlie, there was nothing human about the way you moved.
Gemma's eyes grew to the size of saucers.
What? How did she move?
Even Denise suddenly became very interested as she mashed her eggs and red chili together. As Dad explained what I did, how I moved to everyone, I looked over at Strawberry Shortcake. She had appeared at my side. I scooted Gemma over with my hip and made room for her.